So we are here on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph.
Right.
Ha'omer Ganavti Mishalim Esakerin. So the Mishnah says that if a person admits that his animal was responsible for the death of another human being or someone else's shor, then he pays based on his own confession. And the Gemara is going to bring a machlokas about shor tam. In other words, if it's a shor muad, then it's undeniable that we're talking about mamon and not knas. That's compensation, and therefore hodas bal din kmei eidim dami. But if, on the other hand, we talk about a shor tam in the first three negichos, then we're going to have a major debate about the status of chatzi nezek. In the case of shor tam, the Torah says you pay half the damages. Until now, we've defined knas as more than what you damaged. But here's a case where you pay less than what you damaged. Is that also called knas? So the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim says, "V'chiyigov shor ish es shor re'eu v'meis, u'machu es ha'shor achai, v'chotzu es kaspo, v'gam es ha'mes yechetzun." And this is the basis for the halacha that the owner of the shor ha'mazik has to pay chatzi nezek. And the question is, how do we define chatzi nezek in the case of shor tam? Is it called mamon or is it called knas? And the difference is going to be, if he comes into Bezdin, the owner of the shor mazik, and he confesses that his shor damaged someone else. We have no independent evidence other than his own confession. Itmar, palgun iniska, Rav Papa Omar, palgun iniska, niska mamona, Rav Huna Brein Rav Yeshua Amar Palgud Iniska Knosa. What it means is that according to the first opinion, Rav Papa, he should really be paying the full compensation. The Torah was lenient with him because he didn't anticipate that Ashar would be so belligerent and damaged. So the Torah on the one hand finds him somewhat responsible, but not totally responsible. And the Pshara is that since there's a little bit of an element of, shall we say, mitigating circumstances here, we're going to therefore reduce his payment, which should have been full mamon, full nezek, to half a nezek. But whatever you pay b'toras mamon. Rav Huna, on the other hand, says that really he didn't anticipate that his shor would go out and damage. In that sense, he's not guilty. But the Torah wanted to impose upon him and on all owners of shvarim or anything that potentially could be mazik, a chiyuv shmira. So it imposed a knas on someone to transmit that message, hey, you better be more careful. Rav Papa Omar, the Gemara now analyzes the difference for us. Palgun in his kamamona, kasover stam shvarim lav becheskes shimur kaimi. A person should always anticipate the possibility, even though it's not probable, but there is a certain element of possibility that his shor will go out and damage. What do you think? And from that perspective, we're going to consider it as if he was negligent and he was responsible for what happened. So then what we're saying is that an owner of a shor, any shor, even the shor has no police record, you know, it hasn't proven itself to be a belligerent, antagonistic shor, it requires shmira. And if the shor went out damaged, then the owner of the shor is negligent and he's responsible. He really should be paying, the full nezek. And that's called mama. Bidinu de mishalim kule. If it was, you know, the strict letter of the law without any divine compassion here, we would impose upon him a payment of the full damage. Rachmanahu de chasale. On the other hand, the Torah had a certain element of compassion on him, was lenient, Tiakati Loi Ayin Torah, because at this point his Shor has not proven himself to be a Shor Mu'ad, so the Torah lowered his payment from that of a full nezek to that of a half a nezek. But what he's paying because Stam Shvarim Labaches Kishim Tekaimi, and he should have provided a more adequate Shmira. So there is a strong element of negligence here. Rav Huna Breid Rav Yishua Mar Palgan Nizka Knosa Dekasavar Stam Shvarim Beches Kishim Tekaimi. Naturally, we don't assume that in its nature, in its original state, a Shor is going ahead to be a mazik. So therefore, the element of negligence here is not a very serious pshia, because if he didn't do the proper shmir, it's only because he assumed naively that this shor, like any other shor in the world, is not going to go out and do a hezek. Bidinhu, therefore, if we wanted to go with the strict letter of the law, delo l'shan klal, he really shouldn't be paying at all. V'rachmanu dekan, say the Rachmanu nevertheless instituted a knas, a penalty, imposed the penalty on him. Ki heche, what was the goal? What was the agenda? The nintere liture. Since there is a small, but nevertheless a significant, but a small percentage of animals that, even in their natural state, they sometimes get angry. You know, they leave them in the sun, or I don't know, they had a bed, they woke up on the bad side of the bed, that you should really be providing shmir. So, in a sense, the knas becomes now a means to convey a message. And it's a societal message that people should be very careful about their shvarim. But again, the element of shia here can be mitigated by the fact that stam shvarim becheska shimur, kind of, that most shvarim would not go out and be masked. So now what the Gemara wants to do at this point is bring a number of Mishnayos to try to prove one way or the other whether Palgan and Iska Mamona, Palgan and Iska Knossa. The Gemara gives a Simon Ludover, Hizik Ma Vehemis Kla. So all these are indicative, each one of these four, of the next four paragraphs that we're going to have here, the next four sources in the Mishnayos to try to analyze whether or not Palgad Nizka Knosso Mamon. So let's take a look at the first of these Mishnayos. And all these Mishnayos are in Bava Kama. Tnan HaNizak VeHamazik B'Tashlumin. In other words, both the owner of the Shor Mazik and the owner of the Shor Nizak are participating in the sum total of the loss. What does that mean? So the Gemara says that if you hold Palga de Nizka Mamona, it makes sense to say that the Nizak is participating, contributing to the loss. Bishleim Lamandi Omer Palga de Nizka Mamona is Hainu. Then it makes sense to Shayach Nizak Mitashlumin. We could say that he's actually taking, so to speak, money out of his pocket, because really, according to the strict letter of the law, since Stam Shvarim Labaches Kishim Taimi, the Baal HaShor should be paying him full compensation. Instead, the Nizak is, so to speak, contributing. He's putting down out of the hundred, he's putting 50 on the table, he's taking that loss of 50. And that's called Shneim Mitashlumin. But Bamandi Omer Palgan and Iska Knosa, which means that technically, according to the strict letter of the law, since Stam Shvarim Beches, he shouldn't be paying at all. So then, in a sense, what the Nizak is getting, he's getting a present, he's getting a gift. You know, the Torah awards him with 50% of compensation, he doesn't deserve any compensation. He's not chipping into the laws. Hashta the Lavdi Deka Shokel. The half that he's collecting, really, he doesn't deserve it. It's not really his. It's not coming to him, so to speak, according to the law, according to the din. Is B'tashlum and Isa, and now you're going to say that he pays out of pocket? He's gaining something. He's getting a gift that he doesn't deserve. So the Gemara answers that, no, we misunderstood the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not talking about the loss itself. Let's say the Shor was worth 100 and now it's worth nothing, and each one, the Mazik and the Nizak, are paying 50, so to speak, you know, into a pot, and they're all chipping into this to this loss. But rather, lo nitzcha el lepchas nevela. We're talking about a case where the animal is worth X during its lifetime. It's still worth, as a dead carcass, something. And now the question is, what happens after the hezek and the death of the animal, the nizak? If the carcass itself devaluates, who's going to suffer the loss of the devaluation of the carcass? That's called pchas nevela. Pchas means the devaluation, and the nevela is the dead animal. The carcass, which is worth something on the market, you could sell it for meat, you know, to non-Jews. So on the one end, you could say that even though we're holding now palgut and nizka knasa, right, the Gemara is trying to defend that man diomar, and therefore the nizak doesn't deserve anything, but you could say on the other hand that once the Torah imposed a chiyuv knas, albeit it's a knas, on the Baal HaShor HaMazik, then that knas should reflect half the payment of the loss, and the loss should include even pchas nevela. The Torah is saying a new chiddush over here. Namely, that pchas nevela is something that the nizak is going to, again, using that term, participate in the loss. As if to say that when it comes to the nevela, the nizak has to suffer that loss after, right, let's say we call it posthumous, meaning the nezek is considered like frozen at the time of the death. The nizak is considered the owner of the nevela. We're going to subtract the value of the live animal from the value of the dead animal, as it were at the time of the nezek, and that we're going to split in half. That's palgut nizka knasa. But when it comes to the devaluation of the carcass, so let's say, for example, the live animal was worth 100, the carcass is worth 50, but by the time they get to the carcass and they're able to sell it on the market, it's no longer worth 50, it's only worth 25. So that devaluation of the carcass, which is 25, is going to be suffered by the nizak himself. So the Gemara now asks, is it really possible to convince ourselves that the subject of this Mishnah, Nizak Mamazik V'Tashlumin, is Pchas Nevela, when there's an explicit Mishnah that addresses head-on this whole sugya, Pchas Nevela? And the Gemara says, Pchas Nevela Tanina. Tanina means we have it in a Mishnah. Let's read the whole Mishnah, and then we'll see the last part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kshehizik Chav HaMazik L'Shalom Tashlume Nezek B'Meitav HaAretz. When the animal goes out and it damages, the owner of the animal has to pay the nezikin from meta. Meta means from the best of the best. That's called idis. And the Braisa now adds a point on the Mishnah, and it says tashlume nezek. When the Mishnah says that the mazik has to pay quote unquote tashlume nezek, what it means is melamed, it's coming to teach us shabaylim mitaplu b'nevela, that the entire responsibility to deal with the carcass is imposed upon the owner of the carcass, meaning the nizak himself. And he has to do whatever he has to do to immediately, because time is urgent, he is pressing, to immediately market this carcass and get its full value, because with the passage of time, it no longer is fresh meat and it loses its value. So that responsibility falls completely on the shoulders of the nizak, of the owner of the carcass. So we already have a Mishnah which is interpreted by the Braisa to mean that pchas nevela is shel nizak. And there's no need for adding another Mishnah that says mazik v'nizak v'tashlumin, as if it were teaching me the halacha pchas nevela. So the Gemara says, no, we need two different teachings. And each one is going to emphasize a different dimension of this halach that the Nizak is responsible to be metapil ben avela. It's his headache. And any loss he suffers. Chada betam v'chada b'muot. We're going to need two Mishnayos, one Mishnah that's going to address the case of a Shar Tam, and the other a Shar Muad. Utsricha, we need both of them. The Iash Me'inon Tam, if we only had the Chiddush of Bailam and Taplim bin Avela in the case of a Shar Tam, and you ask the question, well, why is it that the Torah imposes upon the Nizak all the responsibility, the headache of dealing with the nevela? The answer is mishum dakati lo'i ayin, because we want to be a little bit more lenient or compassionate on the bala shor mazik, because he didn't expect that the shor would go out and damage. So since the level of responsibility, or shall we call it negligence, on the part of the mazik is somewhat limited, so therefore the Torah would limit his responsibility in terms of compensation. Hence, the nizak has to be mafsid the nevela if it goes down in value. Aval b'muad, in the case of a shor muad, the ayah, there was already warnings, and the bala shor was warned not once, twice, but thrice to make sure that he guards this animal, protects it. And here the Torah would be more machmir in terms of how much the mazik is responsible to pay. Emo lo, I would say that in this case, the nezek that was caused by the bailam continues, even posthumously, even after the death of the animal, is the continuous nezek is still alive and well, so to speak. The nezek is still imposing its impact and its repercussions on the animal, now in the form of the nevela. So to the same extent that the Torah says that the mazik has to pay at least 50% of the nezek, let that 50% include even the nezek that's generated after the death of the animal. So we definitely need a chiddush to say that the Torah imposed the loss of the carcass chas nevela on the shoulders of the nizak, and that's going to be a separate chiddush in the case of muad, because why should the nizak have to suffer this, you know, as a lone ranger? I mean, why shouldn't the mazik continue to be responsible even after the death? So that's the big chiddush of the Mishnah. Oh, but now lechor we could have a kal v'chomer. So tell me that even in the case of shor muad, the nizak is responsible for the pchas nevela. How much more so in the case of shor tam? Nay. Gemara says no. V'iyash me'inon muad mishum nekar mishalim kule. The mazik is actually paying full damages. So we've already been very, 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 very severe on the mazik, and therefore it could be that there is some little, you know, let's say a light at the end of the tunnel, some little point in which the Torah was compassionate on the owner of the shor muad. Because insofar as the owner of the shor muad has to pay full damages, maybe the Torah would be lenient with regard to the nevela. Aval tam, in the case of a shor tam, emo lo. I might think that at this point, since the Torah already gave its compassion to the owner of the shor mazik and let him get away with 50% instead of 100% of the damages, maybe the Torah would now be machmir and say that 50% of the damages should be continued, and he should be paying it even after the death of the animal when the carcass goes down in value. Tzricha, so I need both Mishnai. So that's as far as the first round here of the four proofs. Toshma, now we're going to quote a different Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ma bein tam l'muad, shatam mishalim chatzi nezik migufo, umuad mishalim nezik shalim min ha'aliyah. So there are two differences here that are mentioned in the contrast between the payment of a shor tam and the payment for a shor muad. In the case of a shor tam, number one, you only pay half the damages. That's one unique feature of shor tam. Obviously, in the case of shor muad, you pay full damages. But there's another important feature, another, shall we say, kula, a leniency in the case of tashlumei shor tam. And that's called migufo. So it means that whatever price the mazik has to pay the ceiling, the highest price that could ever be, you know, to calculate the loss and divide it by two, right? But that number could not exceed the value of the shor itself. So let's say the shor mazik was worth 100, and the shor nizak was worth much more, such that the nezek was 110, or half the nezek was 110. So the ceiling, the cap for what the mazik would have to pay is the amount of that equals the value of the shor mazik on the market. Whereas muad pays even min aliyah, meaning the muad is once we decide how much the shor nizak was worth, and therefore how much we will evaluate the nezek, how much was the loss. That sum has to be paid from the mazik's bank account, meaning it's totally irrelevant and independent of the value of the shor mazik. Okay, that's the Mishnah. What does it have to do with our discussion about mode of a knas? In other words, whether or not chatzi nezek in the case of shartam is a knas or a mamon. So here the Gemara argues from the absence of a third distinction. You would get the impression that the Mishnah is giving us an exhaustive list. That's called lo shir. We're going to see that there's a principle called shir, but the Gemara is not ready for that now. So the Gemara thinks that this list of differences and the contrast between tam and muad is exhaustive. And if you hold palgut and nizka a knasa, then there's another obvious distinction here between tam and muad. Atam einu mishalem al pi atzmo. If the only evidence we have is the admission of the owner of the shor in the case of tam, he doesn't pay. Because Modu B'Knas is Potter, but Muad, Mishalem al Piyatzo, because that's Mamon and not Knas. So now we have a very strong argument from the Mishnah against the man who says Palganiska Knossa. Because if Palganiska is Knossa, the Mishnah should have certainly enumerated this third difference between Tam and Muad regarding Modu B'Knas. And the more answer is Tana Bashir. That we're going to apply a principle that we apply to Mishnah is that the list is not exhaustive. So you can't prove anything from the absence of X on the list. The Gemara is not happy with this. My shear, the high shear. We don't usually, as a matter of need, you know, automatically we assume, well, Tana Mashir. You have to prove to me in one case that's clear, in other words, that's undeniable, that the Mishnah left it out. Once you have a precedent for shear, then we'll apply the principle of Tana B'Shir to other cases, and we'll assume that there are other laws that were omitted from the Mishnah. But can you prove to me that this Mishnah is not giving me an exhaustive list? And the Gemara says, yes, I can prove it to you. Why? Because shear, the Mishnah leaves out another distinction between Tam and Muad. What's that? Chatzi Kofer. That the Baal Shor Tam doesn't have to pay Chatzi Kofer. What happened? His shor killed a human being. When it comes to a shor muad, the Torah says that the owner of the shor muad, if the shor kills a human being, has to pay the full kofar. We'll read the pasuk. The pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, "V'im shor nagachu mishmoltan mitmol shel sham v'huad pibala v'loishman." So if it was a shor muad, the hamis isho isha hashor yisakel v'gamba all of yumas. Im kofer yushas olav vinasan pinyon nafsho kecholasha yushas olav. So there's a very stiff penalty, a financial penalty here in the case where a shor muad killed a person. And that penalty is going to reflect the value of a person, a human being, on the market, because now this human being, Nebuch, is gone. But in the case of shor tam that killed an adam, he doesn't pay anything, not even a chatzi kofer. Now, the Mishnah, insofar as it's addressing the differences between Shor Muad and Shor Tam, and the Mishnah mentions that Shor Tam pays only Chatzi Nezek, it should have pointed out another additional difference, that the owner of the Shor Tam is completely exonerated from any sort of payment in the case where his Shor Tam killed a human being, whereas the Shor Muad pays the full kofar. Why wasn't that mentioned? And that's not included under the Chatzi Nezek, because here we're talking about zero payment. In the case of the Nezek itself, meaning to another animal or any sort of physical property, there we say he pays Chatzi Nezek, he pays half the compensation of the loss. Now we're saying that he doesn't pay a thing. Why? Because the shor is a shor tam. When does he not pay a thing? In the case of shor tam shahorag esa adam, he doesn't pay even one percentage of the kofar. So you see already a precedent for the fact that ton of ishir, the Mishnah left it out. So now we'll apply that to the case of Modu B'Knas. Imishum chatzi kofar lav shiurah. The Gemara says that that's not a shir. That's not an omission. Why not? Because the Mishnah reflects the shita of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. And now we turn to Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. The Yomar Tam Mishal Chatzi Kofer. So we have Machlokas Tanoim as to whether or not the Halok of Chatzi Nezik applies to Kofer in the case of a Shor Tam that killed an Anam. And this Mishnah reflects the shita of Rabbi Yossi. Hence there's no shir because Rabbi Yossi insists that even in the case of Shor Tam Shehorig Esal, don't you pay Chatzi Kofer? So that Mishnah is not going to get us any mileage over here. Tashma, let's quote a third Mishnah. Ha'omer, a person says, Hamish Shori es Ploni, O Shoro Shel Ploni, I raise a Mishalim al Piatzma. Now the Mishnah doesn't qualify this statement. The Mishnah says that Tashlumei Nezikin, in the case of a Shor, is considered Mo. It's not considered Knas. The Mishnah doesn't distinguish between a Shor Tam and a Shor Mu'ud. Obviously, therefore, the Mishnah holds that Palga Deniska Mamona. So Gemara says, my love, shouldn't we assume Bitam, even in the case of a Shor Tam, he pays based on his own confession, which means that Palga Deniska Mamona. Lo, Bimu'ud. The Gemara says that the Mishnah is talking specifically about a Shor Mu'ud. And therefore he pays al pi atzmo, that's called mamon. But tam, in the case of hizik, shori, shortam, shori tam, as shor shalploni, if that's his confession, my, what would be the din? Eino mishalim al pi atzmo. He doesn't pay based on his own confession, because now we're assuming the man diomu who says, palga denizka knosa. And let's just get the names again, that's going to be Rav Huna, if I'm not mistaken, let me see. Yeah, Rav Huna. Rav Huna holds Palgad and Iska Knasa. So the Gemara says, how did Tony Sefer? This is the old Lifla of the list name of the Dog. The Mishnah is going to tell me in the Sefer that what's the case of Knas? It's going to be a case where he admits that his Shar killed an Eved. Is then he doesn't pay based on that. So Nifla of the list name of the Dog, why do you have to stretch your arm out to the case of Shar Shargasa Eved? Why not talk about Shosha Hargasa Adam? But man, Dvaron Murim, when does this loss of Odas Faldin Kameh Eidu Dami apply? That's the Mu'ah. Amal Betam, Eidu Mishal Mal Piatzmo. He doesn't pay because it's a case of Palgan and Iska Knossim, Odu Beknossim's Potur. Why do you have to skip this step within the context of Shor and jump to the case of Evan? So Gemara answers, Kula Bimu'ah Kamayri. The Tana would rather stick to the case of Mu'ad. And discussing the case of a Shor Mu'ad, the Tana wants to distinguish between a Shor Shaharag Ben Chorin, where he pays Mamon, and therefore he has to pay based on his own confession, as opposed to another case of a Shor Mu'ad, which is a confession on which he says that my Shor killed someone's Eved. And the Mishnah wants to be mechadish that even though a Shor Mu'ad is mamon, and therefore through his confession he pays, but in the case of a Shor Mu'ad, Shaharig Shori es Avdecha, that's called the Knash, Shloshim Shal Eved, and he doesn't pay based on his own confession. So this third Mishnah also fails to prove one way or the other. It was a very strong proof, we thought, that Palgan and Iska Mamona. But at the end of the day, we can say Palgan and Iska Knosa. Toshma, the fourth Mishnah, is Zakla. This was our Mishnah, and it says at the end of the Mishnah, Kol HaMishalim Yeser Al Mashi Hizik, Eino Mishalim Al Piatzmo. The Mishnah categorizes and defines a Knas as a case where he pays more than what he damaged. So there's an additional penalty, like Kefel and so forth. The Mishnah doesn't mention a word about a case where your compensation is less than that which the Nizak suffered. It's implying that Mishalim al Piatzmo, that in such a case it's considered Mamon and not Knas, and therefore you would pay. So this would be a very strong proof to the Man D'Omer who holds Palga D'Nizka Mamona, because if Palga D'Nizka Knossa, then why wouldn't the Mishnah say that even in a case of Mishalim Pachos V'Masha Hizik is Eino Mishalim Al Piyatzma? Why was that left out? Lo Tema, don't read the Mishnah the way you want to read it, Pachos V'Masha Hizik, as if to say that the Mishnah is excluding the case of Pachos V'Masha Hizik. Al Eima HaKamosha Hizik Mishalim Al Piyatzma. What the Mishnah is trying to tell you is that kamashi, that if the evaluation of how much he should pay for damages is equivalent to the amount of damage that the nizak suffered, is then he pays al piatzma al piodas pi. But anything that deviates from the amount of money that was lost in any direction, whether it's Yosef Mashizik or Pachos Mashizik, he doesn't pay based on his own confession, because that's called a knas. So the Gemara now asks, wait a second, are you telling me that even Pachos Mashizik is also considered knas and Eino Mishalim Piyatzma Pachos Mai Eino Mishalim Piyatzma? Listening, the Mishnah should have said in a clear way, Zeaklal Kol She'Eino Mishalim Kama She'Hizik. Why didn't the Mishnah spell it out? If you're not paying exactly the equivalent amount of what you damaged, then you don't pay based on your own confession. Eino Mishalim Al Piyatzma, Dimashma Pachos Mafna Yosef. That would clearly indicate whether it's above or below the amount of Hizik. And the Gemara answers Tuvta. The Gemara leaves this as a question without an answer, implying that Palga D'Nizka Mamona, and it would seem here from the final Maskana, that Palga D'Nizka Mamona, yet the very next line, very, very odd, the Gemara says, V'ilfasa Palga D'Nizka Knasa. So the Gemara raises this question, Tuvta V'ilfasa. How can you say on the one side of your mouth, you say it's a Tuvta, you know, this proves clearly that Palga D'Nizka Mamona, and then you tell me in the same breath, out of the other side of your mouth, you say Palga D'Nizka Knasa. The Gemara says, in, that is really true. We should be kofer the halacha based on the question of the Gemara. But nevertheless, that's not what we're going to do. Why? Taima my itosif. What was the base of your tuvta, right? When you conjugate tuvta instead of a noun as a verb, it becomes itosif. So what was your question that led you to this tuvta? Mishum de lo katani, it didn't say that when do you pay Mamon al Piyatzmo, that's Kamash Izik when he pays the exact amount of Nezek. Delo Psikale. So now you're asking, well, why did the Mishnah say Kamash Izik? That would have been a clear-cut indication that whether it's above or below, then you don't pay al Piyatzmo. So the Gemara answers, Delo Psikale. This is a brand new methodological principle in the Talmud. Delo Psikale. Which means that the Mishnah sometimes uses a language which is a little bit less than absolutely clear, because the clear-cut language would lead us to some sort of mistaken conclusion. Now, what's psikale? Psikale means it applies in all cases. It's an absolute rule. And here we're going to prove that there is an exception to the rule, that even though chatzi nezek is indeed a knas, and that's why the Gemara says hilchasa Palga D'Nizka Knasa, had the Mishnah used the terminology Kama Shehizik, it would imply that in one particular case where Palga D'Nizka is Mamon, he doesn't pay Al Piyatzmo based on his own confession. And what is that exception to the rule? Keva De'ika Chatzi Nezik Tzroros. And the case of Tzroros is where the animal damaged something by sending out pebbles, so it was an indirect damage. It was Kofo Shel HaBehema. Or maybe we should be more precise about it. We'd say koach kocho shel habehema. Kocho shel habehema is when the animal damages something directly. But if the animal creates another koach with its koach, so you have the animal's koach, it's koach rishon, and now these pebbles that the animal sent out is koach sheni, and now those pebbles destroy something, is Hilchos Agmir Leih, we have halacha that he has to pay half the nezek, but the mamonah, that part of the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim is that this is mama. And it means that he would pay al piatzmo. So if a person came in and he admits that his shor did damages, does he pay or does he not? Well, we're going to have to ask a bunch of questions. First, we're going to have to ask whether it's a shor mu'ud. But let's say it's a shor tam. We still have to ask and investigate it further. We have to ask him, well, what kind of a nezek was it? Was it direct or indirect? If it was indirect, that's called tsroros. And in the case of tsroros, there's a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim that has the status of mona. Again, Rabosa, let's not try to use our logic here, because logic is not going to go very far. If palgud and niska knosa in the case of a direct hezek, how much more so in the case of an indirect hezek? Because a moment is always more chomer than knas. But part of the hilchus of gemira with that is that this payment has to be paid b'toras moment. In fact, the Gemara in the beginning of Masechta Bava Kamma, based on this halacha of the mamona, comes to the conclusion that tsroros is not a tolda of keren, but rather it's a tolda of shein v'regel. When the animal shoots off pebbles, that's not an expression of its belligerent anger and its deliberate intent to damage, which is keren, but rather it's a result of the natural, normal way that the behaves. You know, so the behavior walks down the street, and if there are pebbles in its way, it clashes. Its feet clash with the pebbles, and the pebbles get chewed off. So that's called a tolda of shame. I'm sorry, a tolda of rego. If it's a tolda of rego, then it's mamona. Even though, and this is part and parcel of the Hilchos Gemira, he pays only half the nezek. You know, if I quiz you and I ask you, when could there be a case of rego that pays only half the damages? L'chora, that's a mistaken question. You can't tell me it's regal and then pay half the damages. But the answer is chatzi nezek tsroros, which is a subcategory of shein v'regel. And yet the Hilchos Gemira tells me that he only pays half the nezek. Maybe it's very difficult to watch the animal, you know, from shooting off pebbles or whatever it might be. And therefore the Torah was lenient and said you only pay half the nezek. Now, if you pay half the nezek, and had the Mishnah said the words kama shehizik, implying that if it was less than kama shehizik, he would not pay based on at. So we come to the mistaken conclusion that in the case of a person who confesses in front of Beis Din that his shor was responsible for a chatzi nezek tzor, for a tzora situation, we would assume he doesn't have to pay based on his own confession. Why? Because it's lo psika. I'm sorry, because it's not kama shehizik. So therefore, the Mishnah had to go out of its way to avoid that language of kama shehizik, so that we shouldn't come to any mistaken conclusions. The Gemara now says the following. If you're telling me that the bottom line to this whole sugya is that palgud iniska knosa, hashin diame palgud iniska knosa, hai kalba diochal imri, shunra diochal tarnagoli ravravi, mishunahu, velomak bina no so bibona. So we have a rule that knas cannot be collected without smuchim, and smicha terminated by the time the Jewish community was settled in Babel. So in Babel we don't have Dayanim Smuchim, and therefore there's no way that the Beis Din could impose a Chiyuv Knas, because Lo Magbinin Knasim in Babel. We need Smuchim for a Knas. So if this be the case, then we have a very interesting Nafgemina from the final conclusion of our sugi, the palgud iniska knasa. And that is that whenever we have a case of keren, meaning keren is an unusual kind of behavior pattern, because again, we're assuming that stav shvarim becheska shimur kaimi, meaning the animal naturally is not belligerent. But if it does something unusual, like a belligerent attack, that's called keren tam, before it proves itself to be a mu'ud. So here are two cases where the animal did something very atypical and something that deviates from the normal behavior pattern of an animal. He has a kelev, a dog, that usually doesn't go bother eating anything but smaller animals, and it ate a lamb, you know, and it's some sort of a larger animal, or the case of a cat that ate a chicken. Ravravi means a large chicken. So this is a definitely fluke, you know, this is a meshuna. Meshuna means that's not the normal behavior, and that comes under Karen. Because Karen is anything that's lav urchi, that's not normal, not anticipated, and you pay chatzi nezek. Well, that's knas, because we're holding now palga nizka knasa. It's lo magbina lebin bava.
Wouldn't just the regular tom ashur, therefore also, that's essentially
correct.
You can't collect that all.
Correct. The Gemara wants to just indicate a new halacha here. The Gemara wants to take a principle and apply it to a case that surprises us. What's the surprise? Havel Zutri, in almost the same identical case where the cat ate up a small chicken, or if there's such thing as a small lamb and the dog ate up a small lamb, that's called Zutri, is Urchehu Umagbina. So the Nafkamina is that since it's Urche and it's no longer told of Karen, because Karen by definition is Lav Urche, it becomes now a told of Shane. And in the case of Shane, we're talking about Mamad and not Knas. In fact, he pays the full damage, it's not half the damage, it's Mike Bina Levin Bava. So the Gemara is like fearing ice, it's making a calculation. These are the following situations and halakhic repercussions of this conclusion that Palgad and Iska Knas. Now the Gemara gives another nafkimina and says the following: Itofis lo mafkinamine. Ah, what does it mean that we have a principle that Bezdin, if they don't have smuchim, like in the case of Bavel, they cannot force a payment of knas? But yesh lakar, we can vacillate. Does that mean there is no obligation to pay? Or does it mean that the hands of Bezdin are tied and they can't enforce the law? And an afkamina between those two definitions is going to be tfisa. Let's say that Nisak took the law into his own hands, and without going into Bezdin, he decided to grab the amount of money, let's say chatzi nezek, and we're in Bavel, where Bezdin has no power, they're not authorized to impose a chiv knas, but he took the law into his own hands. What should we say in such a case? Should we say that let's leave the status quo? Or shall we say, no, we have to force the Nizak to cough up whatever funds or possessions he grabbed from the Mazik? And the Gemara says, here's another nafkimina, lo mafkinamine. We're not going to make him cough it up. If he took the law into his own hands, again, you might ask me, well, this could lead to anarchy. But the bottom line is that Bezdin is not saying there's no Chiyuv Knas. There is a Chiyuv Knas. We don't have the power to impose the Chiyuv Knas. Had this taken place in Eretz Yisrael, where there was smuchim, Enoch Inami would force them to pay. So the Nizak wants to take the laws into his own hands, and he wants to force the Mazik to pay. The Mazik refuses. And instead of having recourse to Bezdin, because Bezdin is going to have to throw the case out, they don't have the authority to impose the Knas, he's going to take the law into his own hands. And that's called the Itofes Lo Mafkinam in it. Which really proves, as we said before, that the chiv is there. Just the Bezdin can't enforce the chiv.
One question on that. What if they see something other than the animal that did the damage? Because isn't it only, you're only supposed to recover it from the animal that did the damage in the case of a short tom?
Well, I'm not sure. That's a machlokas tanoim. But even if you hold that... that Yuchlat Ashar, let's assume he's allowed to collect up to the value of his own shar, of the shar of the mazik's own shar. So in a case where he grabbed up to the value of the mazik, now you could ask a different question, which I think is implicit in your question. Does Bezdin at least have to get involved here to make sure and guarantee that he didn't collect more than what he was allowed to collect? In other words, again, is it going to be mass bedlam over here? V'i-Omar, let's say the Nizak, instead of taking the law into his own hands, he made a declaration in front of the Bezdin. He says, you know what, your hands are tied, you cannot implement this Chiyuv Knas, but at least Ikvu li Zimno li Eretz Yisrael. Set me up with the courts in Israel, you know, send them a fax and tell them, that I want to, you know, give me an appointment. I want to claim against this owner of the Shar Masik, and he should be paying me. It's Makbina Leh. Then we have to comply with his request, that we have to set up an appointment in Eretz Yisrael.
That wouldn't apply. Today you wouldn't be able to do that at
right.
all.
Today we don't have smuchim even in Eretz Yisrael. Right.
So people would have to just go seize what they want.
Yeah, or alternatively, maybe they would... you know, they would have what's called a pshara, right? That's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and maybe in the case of a knas, maybe Bezin here and it's so can work out a pshara. You also have to know another sugi in Sanhedrin, which is actually a sugi in Gittin, which is called anan shlichu sayukav din, and that maybe we do have in certain cases the authority to represent the original Bezin of the smukha when there was a Bezin of smukha. The Elo Azil, the Masik says, I'm not going to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe he holds like those poskim that once you enter into Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to leave. I'm not going to Eretz Yisrael. Probably it's too much of a schlep. So Elo Azil Mashamtina Le. We can actually put him into need. We can give him a whammy. Ubeikach. And it matters not whether or not the Masik wants to go to Eretz Yisrael. Elo Azil Mashamtina Le. Which means the following: we're going to use that method of nidui to scare the wits out of him. You know, we're going to sort of hover it over his head, and we're going to warn him, salek hazekach, which means the following: your animal has exhibited a very dangerous behavior pattern. Correct? He started killing animals that are way out of his range. That's not normal behavior for an animal. And at this point, we have what's called a kelev ra. This is I don't know if I could use the term a rabid dog. I don't know if that's, don't take me literally on that, but it might be a rabid dog. And that's a very dangerous dog. Get rid of it. We don't want to trust you and rely on your ability to watch such a dangerous animal. I mean, I myself saw someone who owned a dog. I'm telling you, it was the most frightening dog in the world. And he, you know, when I questioned him about this, he says, "Well, he has some sort of a buzzer. Have you ever seen this? Where if he presses it, it gives the dog like a shock. So if he sees the dog and there's a some sort of a ring around the dog's neck or so, and he's holding on to the leash, but you don't realize that this leash is an electric thing, and if the dog gets out of hand, he's going to press the thing." So I actually saw this happen, and the dog got as close to the person as you can imagine. You know? Now, I don't know what the law is in various countries. Maybe it's legal to own such a dog, you know, because we live in a very, democratic society where everything is mutter. But I have my doubts whether or not in a Jewish society you would be allowed to get away with that. Because the dog is still very dangerous.
And still scary. It may stop just four bites, but it still scares them.
The heck out of it. Yeah, the guy probably has to be hospitalized for a heart condition. A person should not hold on, possess a dog that could lead to the death of some individual. And another case is Veloyamid Sulam Ra'ua Betok Beiso. Yeah, it's very interesting because the thought process is that sometimes you leave something around. Forget about these cases for a moment, you know, of a kelev ra and a sulam ra'ua. But almost anything that you leave around, you know, if people don't realize what it is, they don't pay attention unless you notify them, and all sorts of things happen. I mean, we know this is ma'aseh b'chol yom. You know, in kashrus laws, the Torah is the halacha is also very careful. Don't leave around something that you're not allowed to eat. In a sefer Torah, you don't leave around a sefer Torah that's puzzled. There's got to be some clear-cut indication, because otherwise people make mistakes. And these can be dangerous mistakes with repercussions. Certainly in the case of a sulam ra, a person doesn't realize that this is a faulty ladder. He climbs up the ladder, and that could be kaput. Shenemar, the Torah says, Now, it's interesting. The Torah doesn't say, "Lo tosim damim b'gagecha." The beginning of the pasuk says, "V'yasisa makel l'gagecha." You know, the roof is very dangerous. But the same of the pasuk, which should have said, "Lo tosim damim b'gagecha," instead it says, "B'veisecha." So Rabbi Nosson says that the reason why the Torah went out of its way to mention Beisecha is to teach us that you're not allowed to hold and possess in your house something that could come to Shvichas Damim. And therefore a person cannot hold on in his house to an animal that does very strange kinds of hezekim that are not normal. And he can't hold on to a Sulam Ra. And here we have a tremendous Machlokas Rishonim, which I think we mentioned in the past, as to whether or not this Issur is violated in the case of something that's dangerous but not life-threatening. And it would seem that according to Savri Shonim, since the Torah says, Lo tosim damim b'veisecha, we're only talking about something that is so dangerous that it has the potential, theoretically, to kill someone, to take human life. But other Shonim assume, no, that as long as it's dangerous, even a person could never injure themselves, then that you're not allowed to hold on to such a thing. And lo tosim damim b'veisecha doesn't mean death, you know, life or death, but it means any sort of injury that's also called dam. So I'll just read the next Mishnah. That's going to end our chazara. Narish and ispatuta boshto pagama uknasa shel avia. In other words, even though she consented to have this beer, nevertheless she cannot be mocheles because the father has rights to collect the boshes and the knas. In the case of tsar bitfusa, but tsar is only paid in the situation of onus, because in the case of mefuta, we assume that there's no tsar. And the rest of the Mishnah deals with the issue of machlokas tanoim, about the situation of a father who died before hamada bedin, and who inherits the knas. Okay then? So that's our chazor. Tomorrow we'll start the 8th parak of Chulin, okay, which is called Kol HaBasar. So see if we can get a hold of it.
Okay.